I think, you know, the ones that are doing it right, and I think probably the ones that are listening to our advice, are pre-establishing goals with a good understanding at the beginning of what is overachievement and what is falling short, but not necessarily in the same weighted and rated process that you have the financial goals.
Welcome to the Executive Compensation Podcast. On this show, we discuss all aspects of executive compensation. Whether you're a compensation committee member, a seasoned compensation professional, or just curious to learn more about executive compensation, this show is the answer. Each episode brings you a focused and actionable interview on specific topics of executive compensation. This episode is brought to you by Meridian Compensation Partners. Meridian works with compensation committees to ensure the most effective processes are in place to go beyond mere compliance with governance requirements and create healthy, dynamic relationships between the board, management, and its advisors. Meridian helps boards use compensation to attract and retain critical talent and to make informed business decisions that will link pay and performance, drive business results, increase shareholder value, and mitigate potential risks. Learn more at meridiancp.com.
Welcome to the Executives Compensation Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Harvey. On this episode, I'm joined by George Pollan and Gerard Leiter. George and Gerard are both partners at Meridian with decades of experience across many industries. Really looking forward to our conversation today. George and Gerard, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it, Ryan. Thanks.
Yeah, so today we're going to be discussing what board members need to know about annual incentive plans. Cash-based annual incentive plans are really the most ubiquitous incentive arrangement in the corporate world. Nearly every company, both public and private, large and small, across every industry, utilize annual incentive plans to compensate and motivate their executive teams. Compensation committees spend considerable time each year determining award sizes, evaluating performance metrics, and struggling to set appropriate goals for these plans. So today we're going to explore some of the design basics and the latest trends, and we're also going to explore approaches compensation committees are using to address the most common challenges in designing annual incentive plans. So Gerard, let's start with you. I think first of all, just maybe laying some groundwork for the audience of, you know, what is a typical annual incentive plan design these days that we're seeing in the marketplace?
Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it. Well, let's start with the basics. Again, we're focused on executive compensation, executive annual bonus plans. So as you think about this, you know, the purpose of this is a performance-based vehicle that looks at performance over a 12-month time period and is a driver for motivating talent to exceed and meet expectations. Overall, you know, the objective here is to have pre-established goals. You know, a bonus plan is a motivational tool to encourage performance. You know, it could be at the enterprise level, could be at the business segment level, could be at the individual level. So varying levels of degree of performance. Typically, executive annual bonus plans are expressed as a multiple base salary. In some situations, that may be a flat dollar amount, but typically it's a multiple salary. As you look at these opportunities that we express under the annual bonus plan, you develop a payout scale. That scale is focused on levels of opportunity that can be earned on the annual bonus plan. Typically, you'll have a nomenclature around a threshold, a target, and a maximum. A threshold is an entry-level point of the plan. Target is a target expectation, and then maximum is the upside. Earnouts under a typical executive incentive plan would be, you know, anywhere between 0 and 200% of that target opportunity. Financial performance goals are the primary driver of these payouts, typically weighing, you know, 75-80% of that opportunity. Very formulaic in nature, aligned with that threshold target max structure that we just referenced. While financial metrics are the primary metric, you typically find one or two financial metrics with goals that are set, obviously, for the annual 12-month performance period. But those goals are in line with the business plan and the projections. You know, such metrics as profits, returns, or cash flow metrics are highly prominent in terms of use in the executive incentive plans. In addition to those financial metrics, I think it's important to realize that non-financial metrics or individual goals or even modifiers may also be used in the structure of an annual incentive plan in terms of what you're trying to accomplish. These are often, you know, obviously not necessarily as formulaic, but again, important aspects of the design. Lastly, you know, very common an annual incentive plan for an individual to have the opportunity to defer a portion of that payment, tax effective deferral mechanism, another tweak that you see a very common structure of an executive incentive plan. But those are kind of the high-level structure points of a typical executive annual bonus plan.
Yep. No, very, very helpful. Just a follow up on that. So, you know, what you laid out there is the typical plan. It sounds very like you use the word formulaic. It's very formulaic in its structure and how it's laid out. Is that generally driven because of that's what's easiest to administer internally? Are there external drivers of that? Are investors or proxy advisors pushing for that? You know, what's the common driver there?
Yeah, well, I sense formulaic plans are a prominent practice, but that's a combination of setting expectations and driving behaviors. So typically you are tying that to your overall business strategy, which is very financially driven. But then externally, you'll find that there's significant pressures to have, you know, a significant portion of the plan tied to pre-established goals from that perspective.
So great overview of, you know, the typical approach of what we're seeing in the vast majority of companies out there, but a lot of various things going on in the marketplace and trends we're seeing. And George, I'd like to explore some of those with you. So what are some of the more recent trends we're seeing and changes in annual incentive design approaches?
Yeah. So, Ren, one of the things that's interesting on this is that the model of these goal-driven plans is pretty uniformly applied in public companies across industries, and it has been for a while. So I think one of the trends is, you know, maybe what's not changing, you know, stability here. And I think that we don't see companies moving away from this goal-driven model, at least prioritizing it in the design. We don't see the basic sort of foundation for the model, which is this percent of salary target award being earned out from, you know, zero to two times target, you know, as a max. That's been pretty stable. And I think the overall mix of total direct compensation with salary, with target bonus as a percent of salary, that hasn't changed. It's pretty stable. Where we've seen changes in the mix are more a heavier weighting on the long term, but we haven't seen companies much, you know, maybe, you know, 5 percentage points up and down because of market practice or internal equitability on the target awards. But otherwise, that's been pretty stable. What we are seeing, and I think it may be a trend for the last 5 years, let's say that some of them were accelerated by COVID and, you know, kind of following that more uncertainty in macroeconomics about interest rates and geopolitics and so on. It was common historically or traditionally to have sort of an established range around the target where the threshold would be, you know, for profits, 10% of the target, and the maximum would be plus 10%, but usually a smaller percentage for revenues because just the law of large numbers on revenues. But, you know, sort of a formulaic approach to that, which is much less common now. Companies are spending a lot of time trying to engineer the threshold to maximum lines and where there should be a steeper curve and a smaller curve. And should there be a flat spot in the middle to, you know, recognize planning error, that type of thing. That's number one. I think number two, non-financial goals. This is, put them in a bucket for this discussion anyway. Strategic, individual, and in recent years, ESG, all coming into this sort of non-financial category. Getting that adopted over the last couple of years and integrating it into these plans has taken a lot of energy on the part of management and the board compensation committees. And, you know, generally, we've seen somewhere between a 5% at the bottom to maybe a 25% effect, you know, at the top. Some quantified, but most of the time, these are non-formulaic. And there's continued evolution here because for a few years, 2020, 21, 22, moving away from it in 23 to, and again in 24, at least moderating it, is the whole ESG element. But the companies now are sort of moving toward what is, you know, the buzzword today is sustainability, you know, scorecards with all of these factors. And the ESG part, less emphasis on the S, and a lot of activity moving on the E part more to the long-term plans than the short-term plans. So that's an interesting evolution. Discretion is a tricky one. The proxy advisors and many of the big investment funds don't like arbitrary discretion. These plans are incentives. You pre-establish goals, you tell people what the goals are, and then those are the goals. And you don't adjust the goals. You can make adjustments to the financials that feed the goals, obviously, but you know, the goals are the goals generally. And the non-formulaic part of these plans, it's fine for them to be non-formulaic, but the non-formulaic decision-making, there's a strong expectation that it's, I call it informed judgment and not arbitrary discretion. And the disclosure of the plans for the NEOs and the proxies is much more detailed around that and trying to demonstrate the difference between informed judgment and arbitrary discretion. And there's a lot of effort and a lot of energy going into that now, especially in industries like financial services, for example, where the model is much more non-formulaic in terms of making judgments around even financial performance. How do we compare to prior years and those kinds of things than it is in some other industry sectors. Goal setting, you know, setting goals based on the annual plan is always a challenge. There's believed to be, and I think evidence of this in our experience, less visibility in the annual planning process because of external macroeconomic factors, public health, you know, in 20 and 21 with COVID, where companies were looking for alternatives. Some have put in relative goals in the annual plans. Both of you have experience with this, so you chime in as well. But my experience is it's still a minority practice. The ones that are doing it are more in industry segments where they've got natural peer groups. So the banks can compare to banks and, I don't know, the big defense contractors can compare to themselves and the energy companies and, you know, that type of thing. And generally where we see relative goals, it's revenue growth against an industry segment or profit growth against an industry segment. But I think those are the areas where there's a lot of sort of movement, much of it on an individual company basis, but movement on the same factors nonetheless.
No, particularly with relative financial goals on an annual plan, you know, one of the biggest challenges I've often seen is a difficulty in not making adjustments because the, you know, the client that's designing that would like to be able to make, you know, financial adjustments to their own numbers. But if you're going to do that, then you've got to try to think about how do you do that across the group or just simply live with gap numbers for everyone. But one follow-up there, George, so you talked a little bit about some of these non-financial metrics and how we're seeing an increase in use of those and scorecards. And you mentioned the desire to, while they're not make them completely discretionary. So how are you seeing your clients do that? Are they just really going through a rigorous process of articulating exactly what success looks like? And are they also articulating what overachievement looks like in some of those non-financials? Or is it more of an on-off, you either achieve it or you don't?
Yeah, I think the ones that are doing it right, and I think probably the ones that are listening to our advice, are pre-establishing goals with a good understanding at the beginning of what is overachievement and what is falling short, but not necessarily in the same weighted and rated process that you have the financial goals. Generally, we're not seeing a threshold to maximum line that you're funding against on some percentage basis for, you know, DEI, for example, or other non-financial categories that are being taken into account here. But I think it is important to have pre-established goals. And it is important to have a pre-established sense of what's good and bad performance against those goals, especially with the demands and the expectations around disclosure of all of the considerations that went into a final decision on how this part of the plan impacted the awards, because there's definitely interest in that on the part of the proxy advisors and the investment funds.
Our last few minutes here, I want to spend some time hearing from both of you. I mean, both of you work with a lot of different compensation committees, different industries. And, you know, we've spent a fair amount of time just talking about the kind of the typical approaches and some of the trends, but I'd like to get into some of the more common challenges that you're seeing and how do committees address those design challenges as they apply to annual incentives. So maybe Gerard, maybe we'll start with you. You know, what are a couple of common challenges that you're seeing committees wrestle with these days?
Well, I would say for a number of years and continues to be number one priority is just setting financial goals, whether it's visible or invisible situations that you're in from an industry perspective. So, you know, you may have a budget that you're trying to align and drive performance to, but, you know, it happens to be a year where you have a flat or down year relative to prior year. How do you set and establish motivational goals with the team and going forward? So I think goal setting and realistic goal setting and balancing kind of the risk profile as to the business and probability of achievement is probably where we spend most of our time with clients. You know, there is not a silver bullet here to say the answer is X. That requires a fair amount of additional work and understanding of the business situation. But when I get into those situations where there is a little bit of question, you know, around the goal setting, one of the things that I strongly encourage is this idea of, you know, flexibility for adjustments. Now, adjustments in general is something that's probably at the end of the cycle frowned upon, okay? But I think what I would say a best practices out of the gates is be upfront around the types of things you think would be appropriate, the categories for adjustments. Pre-establishing those when you set the goals, give the flexibility and the framework for good discussions throughout the year. So such adjustment factors that I would think about are things like, you know, the basics are changes in tax or accounting law. That may impact your annual incentive plan. That's a basic adjustment thing that would be on that list. You may have M&A related type actions throughout the year that may need to be considered and their impact on the financial metrics. You know, things like reorganization or restructuring would be another category that I like to have on those discussions. You know, foreign exchange transactions, if you're a global organization and given the global nature of currency impact, that's something that maybe want to be thought about. You know, other things that recently have gotten a lot of attention are, you know, acts of God or acts of war recently and how they've impacted the business. Those are categories that, you know, those are outside of traditional budgeting goal setting initiatives that need to be, you know, pre-established in the front end. So you're going to do your best to set the goals, which is what every committee does every year, but there are surprises that come along the way. So you need to have the ground rules and framework to do what's right for the business and the executive at the end of the day. So that's a simple example.
What about you, George? Any challenges you've seen clients face lately?
Yeah, a bunch, but let's talk about two. One is almost all public companies now have performance share plans, long-term incentive plans that are goal-driven and like the annual incentive plans, but generally they're 3 years instead of 1 year. But that's the primary form of long-term incentive options taking the place of that. It's really important, and I think a lot of companies are doing it well, to differentiate the short and long-term performance in a way that is complementary to provide sort of a strategic advantage. And that's real important. I think in the annual plans, the approach of focusing on simple operating financial goals and a more strategic set of measures in the long-term plan. So it's very clear to the participants that the annual plan is focused on the sort of annual budget, the annual business plan, and the long-term plan, in this case, the long-term performance-based plan, the performance share plan, is focused on the strategic plan. So, you know, net income or EBIT or EBITDA would be, it to me, a simple operating financial measure for the annual plan versus EPS in the long-term plan, where the PS is strategic. You know, do you pay more dividends? Do you buy back shares? Those types of more strategic considerations. Return on capital in the long-term plan, because the capital base isn't something that you're sort of managing change on a short-term basis. So that differentiation, I think, and trying to get a good complementary mix is important. The other thing is balancing the performance risk and leverage that comes out of the structure of these payout schedules or performance curves. Are we concerned about retention on the bottom end, upside if we hit a home run on the top end, and what's more probable? Are we in a down year or an up year? You know, in a flat to down year, we look at the annual budget for 2024, could be lower than the annual budget in 2023. You know, we draw the same line and we end up paying out a bigger annual bonus for lower performance, which isn't acceptable to in the big investment funds, at least. And they do a lot of analyses around this. So I think those are the two areas where I've seen a lot of focus on the part of clients, and our input has been important to them.
Yep. Yep. No, I would definitely agree. I think one of the probably more common conversations I seem to be having with my compensation committees is around that curve structure, the slope of the curve, particularly, you know, when you're coming off of a challenging year or you're going into a challenging year, structuring that in a way that balances both alignment to, you know, financials, alignment to shareholders, but also provides some motivation and doesn't create a plan which is unachievable. So definitely something I've also seen. Well, you know, I think this has been a really helpful discussion. Good refresher for, I think, everyone on just typical design concepts and also a lot of good thought starters around some of the common challenges that we're seeing companies face when it comes to annual incentives. So thanks again, George and Gerard, for coming on the podcast today. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Appreciate it, Ryan. Thanks.
Thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoyed this episode of the Executive Compensation Podcast. You can see more about this episode along with additional executive compensation insights at meridiancp.com. That's Meridian, the letter C, and the letter P.com. This episode is brought to you by Meridian Compensation Partners. Meridian works with compensation committees to ensure the most effective processes are in place to go beyond mere compliance with governance requirements and create healthy, dynamic relationships between the board, management, and its advisors. Meridian helps boards use compensation to attract and retain critical talent and to make informed business decisions that will link pay and performance, drive business results, increase shareholder value, and mitigate potential risks. Learn more at meridiancp.com.